Welcome to today's Fellowship-wide call on the experiences of housing insecurity, a debtor's unspoken fear, presented by the Debtors Anonymous Underserved and Underrepresented Outreach Committee, also known as the UUOC. My name is Daryl, and I'm a gratefully recovering member of DA from Long Beach, California. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. Press star 6 right now to unmute. God, grant us the serenity.
Grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Great. And we'll now mute the call again. Thank you all for joining in the prayer. The mission of the Underserved and Underrepresented Outreach Committee, UOC, is to support the fellowship in carrying the message of Debtors Anonymous to the debtor in underserved populations and locations. Today, 6 members will speak about their experiences of being unhoused and or homeless and how it relates to their debting and under-earning. The goal of this work is to highlight and build awareness through the experience, strength, and hope of these members of Debtors Anonymous, and to bring awareness of the warning signs and patterns leading to homelessness and or provide assistance if they become unhoused. As a reminder, DA welcomes all debtors and embraces members of any race, ethnicity, nationality, gender, sexual orientation, age, physical or mental ability, socioeconomic status, religious, spiritual, or philosophical expression, or any other trait. This commitment is embodied in a DA inclusivity statement that can be found on the DA website under meeting info, then resources for meetings and groups. The DA safety guidelines can also be found there. Today's call will last for 2 hours. 6 speakers will share for 10 minutes each on their experience, strength, and hope with being unhoused and or homeless and how it relates to their recovery in DA, so that DA may learn how to best reach and serve this condition. Speakers and moderators will be recorded, and the recording will become available on the debtorsanonymous.org website under Fellowship Services, Fellowship Podcasts. After the speaker and moderator sessions, we'll stop recording the call for open sharing. Anyone sharing will not be recorded. At the end of sharing, everyone will be invited to offer their thoughts in an anonymous questionnaire after the call. A link will be provided at that time. All callers have been placed on mute. Press star 6 to unmute only if participating in the call or during the sharing session and possible question and answer period at the end if time remains. Our timekeeper, Yanira, will stay muted. If you are a speaker, press star 6 when it's your time to speak and start by asking if you can be heard. Our timekeeper, Yanira, will give you a time warning at 5 minutes remaining, 2 minutes remaining, and at time. Speakers, please acknowledge the timekeeper. Our first speaker is Dana. Dana will share for 15 minutes about their experience with housing insecurity and or homelessness and debt. Dana, welcome to the call. You may begin.
Hi, everybody. This is Dana, grateful recovering debtor, spender, under-earner, and thank you, Daryl, for asking me to speak today. Who knew that I would grow up to have my couch surfing experience shared and that it could possibly help other people? What happened for me before I got to DA was I hit the skids in 2017. I had blown through most of my inheritance. I wasn't working. I just was living off my inheritance, basically, and I lost my tenant in my commercial property, so I was not getting the $60,000 income anymore. Instead, I was still having to pay on the loan and all the bills associated with that property. And it was a nightmare, and no one knew how I was living. I was too afraid to share what was going on until it became an absolute crisis. And my sponsor from the beverage program, which I'd been sober in at that point for, I don't know, maybe 29 years, said, you need to get out of your apartment. You need to get a job. And I thought, I can get out of my apartment, but a job? I don't want to get a job. And that's my under-earning. And I did not know about under-earning for a while. I didn't understand it. Let me just keep going. So I moved out of my apartment, and I was couch surfing for off and on couch surfing for probably 9 months to a year. I didn't see anything wrong with it. One of my other sponsors I had two sponsors who shamed me pretty badly in AA about my finances. And I just want to say that, they didn't understand what was going on, and maybe they didn't know about DA, because neither one of them suggested going to DA. But I found DA, thankfully, in 2018, and I came in, and so that was 7 years ago. I was still couch surfing, and had no idea where I was going to live. I had sold some real estate, still wasn't working. I had a sponsor. I was going to meetings. I was doing the step sponsor DA workshop that's at 8 a.m. Eastern time every day. That saved my life. I was working steps. I had an emergency PRG, pressure relief group and meeting, pressure relief meetings. So I was keeping my numbers. I was praying. I knew that the steps were where the recovery was at, and so I'm super grateful for Step Sponsor DA. I happened to get there in March when they started a new 60-day cycle, but every morning I was waking up terrified. I have anxiety anyway, and I was just terrified as to how I was going to live, how I was going to pay my bills. I had no idea. My family was very judgmental and critical, and I grew up with that, so that was a trigger for me from anyone. And I want to say that I never felt judged or criticized. I haven't from anybody in DA in all this time, and I'm super grateful for that. We are. It's a disease, and we're. Thank you. God, that goes fast. We are sick people, and, we're here to get help. So what happened for me was that I was, just doing all the things I was supposed to be doing, and out of the blue, a living situation arose to live with my aunt, to rent a room with my aunt. I insisted on paying her something. She didn't want me to pay anything. I said, no, I have to because my program. So for the last 6.5 years, I've been living with her, paying a family rate of rent, which I'm very grateful for, and because I live in San Diego, California, and it's very expensive here. I continue to work the tools of doing pressure relief groups. I recently, with my PRG, they want me to do a spending plan regarding my vision of getting my own place. Where I'm living has been really great, but a couple of my cousins are toxic. They're not in recovery, and they have tried to force me out of the house. And so it's not the most stable environment. At the same time, what I've been doing for work in the last 7 years is I've become a professional pet sitter. And so that's how I earn my own income. And I think last year I grossed about $38,000 just in my pet sitting business. But it's not enough to live in San Diego. And so the spending plan is to do my vision of my photography and get that business going so I can create more income so that I can afford to live on my own. I really want to be self-supporting through my own contributions. It's really important to me that I do it that way and not use my mineral interests for that. I don't have any retirement, and so the mineral interest royalties that I get, I really want to just put into retirement funding, and that's my vision. And so my PRG team wants me to work on, they've got me working on my spending plan, on how much it would cost to move, how much it would cost to live out in San Diego out on my own, you know, create a vision of what that would look like for me, what the place looks like, write about it, do a vision board, feel it, believe it, you know, pray about it, write down what I want versus what I need kind of thing, you know, needs and wants, and get really clear. It's kind of like writing a message to God and saying, you know, hey, God, this is what I really want to have, and I don't know if this is possible, but this is what I want, because I would really love to have a guest house. There are places available. I know that. And there are ways to pay some cash and then barter the rest. So that's what I'm hoping for. And it's a work in process. couch surfing, it's they call it middle class homelessness. And I really, thank you. It's interesting to me that I really did not, you know, see that at the time. I didn't see anything wrong with it. And I forgot to tell you. So my dog and I were couch surfing, but I was still paying my credit cards because that's what I thought you were supposed to do. I thought I was being responsible by continuing to pay my credit card people. And my PRG team right from the outset told me to stop paying on them because I couldn't meet my basic needs. And that was the goal at the time, was to meet my basic needs of rent, food, and or, you know, housing and transportation. And so that was what I strove for in the beginning. And I'm just really grateful for everyone who has helped me along the way, and for our sister program of Under Earners Anonymous, who I found I needed to go there and work more deeply on that aspect. I know it's one of our, you know, symptoms, but I needed to work more deeply on that area of being earning avoidant and not making enough money. And that's really helped me make a lot more money in pet sitting. I'm really good, and I charge a lot for what I do. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for everything that DEA has offered. I don't know where I would be without Debtors Anonymous. I really don't know. And so I'm very grateful for my higher power bringing me here. And thank you again for asking me to speak. And I'll talk with that. Thank you.
This is Will, your host. According to this, our next speaker is Tony. Is Tony here? Thank you, Dana, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope.
Hello?
Tony?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
Hi. Yes. So we can hear you. Tony will share for 10 minutes about their experience with homelessness and debt. Tony, welcome to the call. You may begin.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Anthony. I'm a debtor. I'm fairly new to DA. I've been in the program around since I joined the program in around October of last year. I haven't really accumulated a lot of time, but I have a sponsor. I've been attending meetings. I want to say this year, February, I started to actually use the tools of the program as far as keeping my outreach, doing outreach calls, calling a sponsor, meditation, prayer, and that's been an awakening for me. So what it was like, I live in New York City, and a lot of I've made a lot of wrong decisions financially. Living in a men's shelter in New York City, I like to say thanks for the speaker that just spoke. A lot of identification, but however, I kind of suffer from that middle class homelessness as well. And I say that because I started working construction at like the age of 21. And as a construction worker, I made a lot of money. However, it wasn't about the money. It was about the things that I would spend the money on. I lived in a shelter, and living in a shelter, I never heard of DA. My life was centered around compulsive spending, and that's buying clothes, I suffer from compulsive spending, not paying bills that, and just running up credit, taking out loans, and not paying them back. I guess I used a lot of my money not focusing on
5 minutes.
Thank you. Things that I needed to focus on, things that I learned today in DA, as far as my spiritual contributions, my having my house in order, that's pretty much it. Being attentive, to the ways that I spend my money. Yeah, this is a rough situation. I mean, I'm sorry. What it's like now, you know, I have DA in my life. I'm working the steps. I finally was able to get an apartment. I was able to save up close to $8,000 and get an apartment. I'm still working with my sponsor on learning how to pay bills on time, learning how to be responsible, pay off debt while having an apartment, paying gas bill, phone bill, car insurance. I didn't even know you could buy a car without inquiring debt until I came into the program and started to hear other people share. I guess for me, the thing that really caught my attention in DA was reading a passage that said, a compulsive spender is a debtor who just hasn't ran out of money yet. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. And that was the passage that really motivated me to take my numbers, be attentive to the things that I spend on a daily basis, keeping receipts, doing outreach calls, hearing other people share. This has all been, I mean, like I've said, I've only been in the program since October, so just being blessed and being in the room. I love the men's meetings for me, being in a room with other men, hearing the experience, strength, and hope really gives me hope and faith. And as it says in the big book, faith without works is dead. So for me, I have to continue to do the work. That's all I really got.
Tony, thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Very much appreciated. Our next speaker is Darling. Darling will share for 10 minutes about their experience with housing insecurity and or homelessness and debt. Darling, welcome to the call. You may begin. There you are. You can be heard. Please begin.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here today. I'm Darling. I'm a recovering debtor and under-earner. And I'm grateful for my higher power, whom I call God, who sent me here today with you. I will start by saying the Thomas Merton prayer, because it's a prayer that really helped me to this day, especially when I was homeless. And it goes like this. My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I'm following your will does not mean I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may not know nothing about it. Therefore will I trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. So I said this prayer so many times in this program. Every week, pretty much. But when I was homeless, every day, many times a day. And that kept me connected with the conscious contact. I've been in DA since July 2022. My longest sobriety was, solvency was 1 year. And now I am counting 60 days by the grace of high power and this program. So the homelessness, how was it? Well, for me, funny enough, it happened a year, at my year anniversary. I had a geographic where I moved from Africa to the U.S., and I became homeless, and I was not expecting that at all. I was not prepared for it. I could not imagine. My homelessness did start before I left West Africa. I left my parents' home in April 2023, and I was homeless from April until I came to the U.S., and then just continued. So it was April 2023 all the way to September 2024. So it lasted a year and a half almost for me. And it was shocking because, yeah, I had been solvent a year in the end, you know, even I was solvent through a lot of it, and I was also not solvent through a lot of it, half of it. And so what kind of, I just wanted to start with this, the definition of housing insecurity. So insecurity, according to the dictionary, means anxiety, lack of confidence, the feeling of being open to danger, and lack of protection. And then housing, house means sheltered, or this means space allocated for this thing, whatever it is, or a person. So for me, housing insecurity was a painful symptom of my disease of alcoholism, which affected my relationship with God in all areas of my life, especially my finances, which is why I'm in DA, and my relationships, which is why I'm in another fellowship for me with SLAA. Why I mention this, why I start here is because until I really understood what is housing insecurity a symptom of, I could not be free from it. And it was really for me a symptom of the excessive amount of insecurity that I was exposed to as a child and later on as a teenager as well. So I grew up with a higher power that I could not trust. I was not protected. I was in danger all the time, and I was in fear. Fear ran my life. Still runs a large part of it, but it's getting better, right? And so I had to understand that, you know, and that was the biggest aha I got through the experience. And so a lot of it then was how to recover, literally, my sense of security, how to have a new higher power or become aware of a higher power that would protect me, that would keep me safe if I followed the dictates of the higher power, as the big book says, and the dictate of this program, which is where I can recover at least that financial security. So this was really important. And to me, homelessness was God's will at times, because my higher power was like, yo, where does your security come from? Is it going to be the house? Is it going to be the person who pays the rent? Right? Is it going to be the person who owns the space? Who is the source here? Who is going to be the higher power? And that was the battle that was happening inside me and still happens. Thank you so much. And I would just briefly mention my mother's story. She was a daughter of an alcoholic and married to my father, an alcoholic. And I grew up hearing the following. If it wasn't for the house, I wouldn't have stayed with your dad. And when I was going through abuse and I had to make a decision to leave that abusive marriage before I left my abusive relationship with my parents, I heard Munya. It's an expression in Senegal. It means just bear it, keep bearing it, bear the pain. And she would say that was her destiny. And there was no sense of agency. And she said that one time she made the decision that she would leave the abuse, but she looked at our eyes as children and she didn't have the strength. And so she chose this pain, this kind of, I guess, insecurity over the insecurity of grabbing for children and not knowing where you would go. And so my mother, in her time, made the decision to keep the familiar and known pain instead of facing the unknown, uncomfortable, humbling, and unfamiliar deliverance, right? And I am also reminded of the big book, pages 99 to 100, that says, let no alcoholic say he or she cannot recover unless his family is back. In this case, is her shelter or her house is back. This is just not so. In some cases, the wife, and you can scratch that for the house, will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that her recovery is not dependent upon the people, scratch that, the house, or the abuser, right, the one who pays the rent. It is dependent upon the relationship with God. We have seen men and women get well whose families, scratch that, whose houses or abusers who paid the rent never returned. We have seen others slip when the family, scratch that, house, came back too soon. And that was my takeaway. And I just want to say, this is the other thing that my higher power said to share was that I really had to learn that it's my higher power who gives me protection, not my abuser. And the under-earning relationship, I ended up understanding that too. The shelter was taken away from me because it was my cave. I didn't have a neutral relationship with shelter. I had a relationship where the house becomes my place of hiding, where I have an unhealthy attachment, and I'm not going to see the world. I'm not going to face the world. I'm going to stay in anorexia, isolate. And my connection is with God is going to be there in the house. I'm not going to face the world, right? So thank you so much. There's a big connection with the under-earning. And for me also with the SLAA, like the terror, right? Or like not being able to leave the entanglement of the abuser or wherever they were. So I understand now it was a blessing for me to have so many months of practicing contrary action, right? Contrary hiding, because I didn't have a cave anymore. And I'll just give you an example for me, how it showed up. I slept on the street one night, thank God. There was a night I was in a music studio with cocaine addicts who were trying to break through. There was a night I slept at the airport, two nights. Then there were many times I slept in the bus. I took the bus just to sleep, or the train station, Airbnb. Unfortunately, many times I would be in a house with alcoholics, so that was not good for my recovery, unrecovered alcoholics. Hotels that people paid, hostels, I maxed out on them. Church, I slept in churches before the pastor caught me. Churchgoers' houses, 3 days to 2 weeks. Classmates' houses, 5 to 7 days. Motels where there were drug deals happening, and I was praying next door. Shelters, I tried the state, the church. My favorite was a nun's house. That was where I felt most peace and security. But we had to sleep by 6, and that was horrible for my DA program because I needed to work. I tried sober houses and halfway houses. Those were very tough for me because I was already almost 2 years sober. And so they usually rejected me because they said I wasn't drunk enough, or I wasn't drunk, right? I didn't have a problem with alcohol, which of course I did. Anyway, I just want to finish by saying what changed doing step four. Thank you. Doing step four changed everything. Fear no longer runs my life the way it used to. And I'm so grateful to God for that and for this program. Thank you.
Thank you, darling, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Our next speaker is Howie S. Howie will share for 10 minutes about their experience with housing insecurity and or homelessness and debt. Howie, welcome to the call. You may begin.
Thank you, Daryl. Can you hear me?
Yes, great. Please begin.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Howie. I'm a debtor. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I am 77 years old and happily retired. In 1997, I was 49 years old, and two major events happened that year, one good, one not so good. The good thing is that I found Debtors Anonymous and quickly became an active member of a small group in Newton, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. The not-so-good thing was that my 16-year marriage was ending, and my wife and I decided to sell our house And so I had to go out into the world for the first time in over 20 years and find a place for myself to live. I did find an apartment through word of mouth. There was something unusual about the rental term, and I don't believe they ran a credit check on me. It was more that somebody vouched for me. So I did have a place to live, except I had about a six-week gap before I could move into that apartment. Fortunately, my uncle, who lived nearby, was going on a month-long vacation and generously offered to let me house-sit. But I still had about a week and a half gap with no place to live. So without a plan and limited resources, I decided I would sleep in my car for that short amount of time. So I packed my belongings in the trunk and started sleeping in the car every night. Oh, and by the way, I also had a dog, a 60-pound greyhound, also joining me in my car crashing. And that worked out okay. I believe I had a gym membership. I must have had a gym membership, and I would go there in the morning to dress myself. I was working and needed to show up in a dress shirt and tie every day, and I managed to do that. And I don't have much of a memory of what I did for meals, but eventually I did the house sitting for my uncle and then was in that apartment for about a year. After that lease ended, you know, I lived in various other apartments. I was going to DA, but I was still living really paycheck to paycheck, scrambling to, you know, get together, you know, a month's rent, a security deposit. But I was surviving, but it seemed like each apartment I lived in was sketchier, if that makes sense, with landlords who would do the minimum to upkeep their buildings. At some point, I got a new job, and I was looking to move closer to that location. I had worked with a fellow at the previous job, and somehow or other, I knew that he had a large house and possibly might have a room to rent. So I reconnected with him and checked out the house. It, you know, nothing fancy, but it was okay. And we agreed that I would rent a room for him from him and kind of have the run of the house, you know, share the bathroom and kitchen. And I'd pay him $300 a month. And I thought, wow, what a deal. You know, I can really start, you know, getting ahead of the game, put some money away. So I moved in with him. And after about 3 weeks, you know, the little light bulb went on my head, and I came to realize that I was living with an active alcoholic. Now, other people might think, man, I should move on. But, you know, it was a really good deal. And he was kind of a quiet alcoholic. So, you know, I ended up staying there for about a year and a half.
5 minutes.
And it wasn't great, but it worked out. What happened is he had his own issues, and I believe his siblings were pressuring him to sell the house. And I was aware of that. And then one day I came home from work and there was a for sale sign in the front yard. And, you know, maybe he planned to tell me that he was putting the house up for sale, or maybe he thought he had, or, well, whatever. But here we go. It was time for me to find another place. So, you know, I started doing the room or apartment search. I remember going out with, you know, my partner, who is now my wife, to look at a place. It was another room rental. It turned out that she knew the owner of the house casually, which maybe was a good thing. But as we talked more with this person, we just kind of got this feeling that it wasn't going to be a good situation. You know, there was something definitely off about that. So we backed off, or I backed off. And eventually I actually rented a place in a rooming house that was professionally run. I had, you know, my own room, which was locked. We had shared bathrooms, a shared eating area. Somebody came a couple of times a week to maintain, you know, the common areas, and it was actually very sane. It was extremely good for my recovery. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of shame. I was embarrassed to be 55 years old and living in a rooming house, and I didn't talk about it in meetings or in PRGs. In PRGs, I had, you know, bigger problems that I felt like I needed to deal with. So I just didn't talk about housing. And in hindsight, probably I should have, and probably would have gotten some support in figuring out where to go and what to do. So I stayed in the rooming house for well over a year, and it, as I said, it worked out well. And my relationship with my now wife was moving along, and we decided to find an apartment together, which we did. And we ended up staying in that apartment for 10 years before we ended up moving across country to Albuquerque. And there's a lot of recovery in that. We had a really great relationship with our landlord. It was a two-family house. We lived on the first floor, and he lived upstairs. And, you know, there was a lot of trust. At one point, we asked if we could get a couple of rooms painted, and he quickly, you know, offered, you know, to pay buy the paint, and we got a friend to come and paint a couple of rooms. When we got our new washer and dryer, he had the connections set up at his expense. And later, as we were deciding, you know, about our future, we did some exploration and decided to move to New Mexico. And since we've been here, we've lived in one location. Again, for over 10 years, we work well with our property manager and the owner of the property, and we have a year-to-year lease. The rent has gone up a little bit each year, but what I'd like to close with is that, you know, even though now through this program we are prosperous, on some level, we still deal with housing insecurity. We know the owner of this property, which we love, is elderly. She may, you know, sell the property, or she may pass away, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years. So it's not a forever thing. But at the same time, we have resources, either to go out and get another place, you know, even if it's short notice. Thank you. So through the miracle of this program, we have resources. We keep track of our money. We have categories for moving to a new house to put a deposit down if that's what we need to do. And, you know, we know you know, where we live is not our higher power. It's who we are and what we do. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Howie, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Let's move on to our next speaker, Charlie P. Charlie will share for 10 minutes about their experience with housing insecurity and or homelessness and debt. Charlie, can you press star 6 to be heard?
I think I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
You are. You are. Great.
Oh,
please
great.
Begin.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for having me. And I'm recovering from debt. I'm Charlie. And I think this has been a significant part of my life. Not that I've been completely homeless, but there were times when I thought it would be easier to just go out and live on the street. I have been without a place to live many times, and I started out. I came up living in a very blue-collar town, and my dad had kind of a white-collar job, and I think his dad had done a little better than him, and then I don't know about the generations before that, but there were a lot of farmers, and so I think there was and drinking and stress, and he was brutal and terrifying, he married my mother, who was from kind of a well-to-do family outside Philadelphia, and I live in southeastern Connecticut in a town that my great-grandfather had been born in, and he had moved down to Philadelphia area and done well, and we would go down and visit, and I remember early on there was this sort of me as the youngest of three, and my Adriana, my favorite aunt's had my favorite aunt's daughter, Alexia, a year and a half. We were down. I think if there was a kind of a poor section of the main line in Philadelphia, they lived there, and there was a pool. And my brother didn't particularly like Adriana's daughter, Alexia, who was a year and a half. And Adriana put her outside to play with us. My brother shoved her back in the house, and she went to the backyard and was found in the pool about an hour later. No, she couldn't be resuscitated. And something very peculiar happened in that moment that was really kind of an experience point for me, because everybody had been, it was such a nucleus of love and safety in the family. And I remember Adriana howling, and she was from a small hill town in Italy, and her sister had drowned or died somewhat the same way, and her mother was all about this curse that they had. But I watched everybody just sort of their eyes roll back in their head and disappear, and I was like, wait a minute, where the hell did everybody go? And I noticed this fragility, and it changed me, the way that I look at people and the way I still look at people now when I look into them. I think that it was tragic. I think that was the hardest part of it. And I remember, I don't know if Adriana was more upset about losing the baby or more upset about the hope of this family that was going to be something significant for her, that she lost that, the howling. I remember kind of being dragged out of the house. We never talked about it. I was in the pool a week later learning how to swim. And I think one of the most significant things that I lost, that for me, I had this great connection to this awareness of like what people could be like, but I didn't know how to maintain that connection. And that sort of breakage. I wanted to go to the local public high school, and my dad had us all go to prep school. And I remember at prep school, the kids would remind me that my blood, because I didn't come from some trust fund family, my blood was garbage, that I was trash. And because there were so few people I really felt connected to. And I mean, to me, everybody at the school was beautiful. And I had that sort of perhaps foolish, idealistic vision of what people are like inside, and I could see the two sides of it, but it broke me down. And growing up in the house. I think my ability to sustain and take care of myself broke me down too. And shortly after high school, I got sober, and I've been without a drink since then, 1985. I'm 50. Thank you. I'm 58 now. And the first time I was without a place to live, I had sort of fallen apart and wasn't functioning well. I was sleeping on a couch. This woman who was a friend of ours, I mean, I must have been like 20, and a guy who had been my best friend, and he was 30, and we were sleeping on her two couches, and she was a single mother, and like, I look back on it with just kind of horror for how sort of withdrawn and out of it I was. And there was a guy whose younger brother was in a band with my brother, and he was in AA, he pulled me out of there, so he became my sponsor, and he kind of turned me around for a while. When I went to graduate school, which I got all loans for, and I lived with my mother for a very extended period of time, unable to pay rent while I was in school. And fortunately, for whatever reason, I found a place on Crenshaw, North Crenshaw in L.A., where I was in school near where my mother lived. And I was able to rent out the downstairs apartment, and that covered most of the bills. But being in that apartment, I think I was trying to become an art star, went to graduate school and had all this debt. And I at some point I unraveled I didn't realize it was a lack of connection. And I came back from there and I lived with a friend in Rockaway, New York, and another friend, all people from Young People's Conferences, near Hartford. And I ended up having a rally, and I was doing okay, and I was building and designing and building, and I started crashing at my girlfriend's house. I rented a room somewhere in somebody's house that I never had any intention of sleeping in. I stayed with my girlfriend, and then we got married, and we had a baby, and then the baby happened. The economy collapsed, and I remember starting to get ulcers. And what happened was, I also had a food recovery in there. I was 9 years clean in one of the PAL recovery programs. And in 2015, I recommitted to food and realized I think my kid was born in 08, and then 2015, my wife and I split up, and I started going under Earners Anonymous. And I started another trip through the steps. I had gone through the steps like a week. The guy who wrote the set-aside prayer, a week after he wrote that, right after I got to L.A. in 95, he led a retreat that I went through with what later became the Big Book Awakenings method. And then I went through the Hyannis method, which is very similar, both extensive.
2 minutes.
Looks into the steps. And then when I got into Under Earners Anonymous, woman offered up that she was a sponsor, and she took me through the steps, and another year and a half trip through the steps, and we did this kind of Joe and Charlie method. And what happened was that it was the first time I allowed myself to look at where I had been hurt, threatened, or interfered with, and where in column three it had made me unstable. And I started to reconnect to myself in that third column: my self-esteem, personal relations, pride, ambition, security, pocketbook, sex. I started to look at my shortcomings, not what I did wrong, but when I was affected, I had breakdown. They talk about the self-imposed crisis we could neither postpone nor evade. And that breakdown would make it impossible for me to function and take care of myself. And I had a sponsor that helped me put together a spending plan based on what I had coming in. The first thing that became apparent was I was $400 short a month, and I spent half my money on dining out. And that changed. And the first month that I had the money to populate my spending plan, before the month began, many things started to change. And I bought probably the cheapest house in the state of Connecticut on the lowest day of the market after the housing collapse. It was gutted. It's like $18,500. And now it's worth, I don't know, 10 times that. But there's not a lot of money going around, and my goals are not visions. I think that I'm working with new business things that I want to do, kind of jumping to the end here, but I'm realizing that I don't want a vision. I don't want a vision of stuff. I want a mission that I can implement with income goals that will, is that time, with income goals that will maintain sustainable stability, which is what I currently experience. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I'm going to try Tracy one more time. She might be having technical issues, but Tracy, do you want to try to?
Can I be heard?
Tracy? Yes, Tracy. Wonderful. So please feel free to share for 10 minutes about your experience with housing insecurity and/or homelessness and debt. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and I am now calm and connected to my higher power. I am a debtor, a compulsive under-earner. I'm bathed with money, self-employed, and recovering in BA and BDA. I am here because of my what they call chronic homelessness. Although I came from a middle-class background, I can say now from a lot of step work that my parents were good timing people, and they worked hard to take care of me, but I was neglected. I was youngest of four, and I was taught to be very independent, and I could not communicate my needs. Being the first of my family to graduate high school, of my siblings to graduate high school, I went on to college, and I moved without telling my parents. They were paying my my housing. And so, I could not pay because I was, they charged me more where I ended up moving. And so I moved out. I kept getting the money, and I tried to save it to move back into the place I was that was affordable. And so there was always a fellow student there. Stayed with this person and that person. And so, I got through that and moved into a, back into the place that I was in. And by that time, it was summer, and I decided not to go to school that summer. My mother died that summer, and I didn't go back. And so I can say, as a qualifying under-earner, I didn't go back to school because I was materially deficit. I blamed it on being having material law. And so I started working, and I worked, and I liked it. I liked earning money. So I went back to school while I was working, and it was not easy. My mother was my main supporter of me being educated, whereas my father wanted me to get married and be taken care of. I can't say that I didn't try, but it was unfortunate that it didn't happen because I would have thrown myself into it. But I can say that I eventually went back to engineering school and got another job. And while I was at my first school, I had began to do hair just because, you know,
for friends and so forth. And so when I dropped out of school and had this second job, and there were women who liked my hair, and so someone says, she can do hair. So before I went to work, I would come to work, and I would do two and three people's hair. And so I worked for a terrible manager after a while, and long story short, I got fired. And so I eventually decided to go to beauty school. So it was how I saw a friend that was licensed on her own money in her marriage. And that's how I saw myself. And so as it turned out, the beauty business has been good to me, considering I had no real desire to manage my money. I had no real desire
5 minutes.
Thank you. And a real desire to live the standards of other people. And so I was in a car accident after being licensed in the state of Michigan, where I'm from. I'm in Los Angeles now. And so my injury prevented me from being as comfortable as a stylist. And so my earnings started to slip. I made bad decisions, and what turned out to be a lifestyle with a man that I wanted, it fell apart. So I can remember asking my father if I could move with him and his new wife, and he told me no. And so that began the couch surfing thing when I could not pay my rent at this wonderful apartment that I was in. And so I went back to school, got an AA in business. I thought I did not know business, and so I thought it would help me. And so as it turned out, I thought that I would change careers. I did a relocation to Los Angeles, and that is where I found Debtors Anonymous. I was in a shelter because I could no longer couch sleep with friends from Detroit. And so it was at DA that I received my first miracle. And after that miracle, I moved into a wonderful place in a wonderful neighborhood. And after 10 years, I had to leave that place. It was the time of the housing collapse and the economic downturn. And so I had stopped going to DA after my miracle because I could not keep my numbers. It was baffling for me. Most especially my business numbers, because I had gotten my license in the state of California, and to separate the business from my personal. So everything went actually into the personal. The business is very lucrative. And so I found a place and had a terrible landlord.
2 minutes.
Thank you. I had to be evicted, and then I had to sue because it was in a legal place and I didn't know it. And so with that settlement, I found a really nice place and got into another car accident, actually with a DA fellow. And so I stayed at that place and could not fully pay the rent. So I wasn't evicted, but I settled to just move out and pay as much as I could to the landlord. And I went through the series of couch surfing and staying with friends here and there. And so I stayed with people who had alcoholic issues or other drug issues and decided I would just not stay with anyone and started going to a 24-hour spa to sleep and bathe. It was affordable. And so I won a settlement from that car accident. And, as it turned out, I could not find a place. I won't go into the specifics, but I was turned down a lot, or I didn't hear from anyone, and my reference was not given a proper reference for me. It was opposite to what I thought, in a very nasty way. And so I am still unhoused. I have a housing voucher. I had thank you. I've gotten advice from a DA fellow to not move into a drug-infested or dangerous neighborhood. And so that has been my problem since with this voucher, is that I cannot find a safe place. But for right now, I am all right. I am giving service and in many meetings and in the program for the third time for the spirituality. So I am all right, and there's something great on the other side of this. And I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Thank you to all our speakers. Our call host will now end the recording for this sharing portion. Anyone sharing, asking, or answering a question from now forward will not be recorded. So if our host could now stop the recording.